So, hello everybody. This is going to be an informative, exciting, hopefully life-changing webinar, teleseminar for all of you listening out there. The name of this is The Secrets to a Long, Hot Marriage. Any of you on the call that's live, either on the phone, or probably more on the webcast, if you want to ask a question, there's a place where you can, and I will check from time to time to see if there are any questions, and I'll be happy to answer them. And this is anonymous. This is what's great about this. There's no risk of being seen or heard by anybody else, so this is an intimate subject. So when you have the opportunity to ask anonymous questions, it might be easier to do that. So just remember that this is your teleseminar, webinar. There'll be probably some people on the live call. A lot more will be listening to the replay because I know how that works. People get busy. But any involvement on you would be wonderful and will just enhance what I'm doing here. Okay, so, and this is being recorded for the replay. So the secrets to a long, hot marriage. Let me tell you just a little introduction, who I am. Some of you, most of you might know. But my name is Todd Krieger. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I've been in private practice for 29 years. Since we're talking about marriage, I'll tell you I've been married for 27 of those last 29 years consecutively. I have two children, two daughters, 18 and 15. Even though I'm a diehard Trojan, my daughter decided to go to UCLA. That's good. She's in a place for her. That's right. So she's at UCLA, and my 15-year-old is a sophomore in high school. So I have been doing this therapy for many years, but I have found couples therapy to be a love of mine. And back in 1991 to 92, I did go to UCLA School of Medicine and got some more intensive training in human sexuality. And so since then, you could say my specialty has been human sexuality, sex therapy, sexual dysfunction, sex addiction. But when we're talking about that, really everything's linked. Our marriage, our communication skills, our way of looking at each other, how do we deal with pain, our ability to have romance, ways to solve problems and make decisions and make compromises, all that affects our passion and sexuality. So as I go through this seminar, The Secrets to a Long, Hot Marriage, which is definitely based on my book, The Long, Hot Marriage, you'll see that it's definitely not just about sex, even though it is about sex. It's about all of it. It's all about all of it. And so one of the things that I want to do is help you see that you are not in your parents' relationship. This is not your parents' relationship. You know, people come to see me, and they are probably saying, why do I have to see a therapist? I mean, why can't we solve this on our own? You know, what's wrong with me, or what's wrong with my partner, or what's wrong with us? The truth is that our parents do not know how to have a real healthy, passionate, alive relationship. There may be some diamonds in the rough. There may be some exceptions out there. But for the most part, our parents didn't know how to have a long-term, passionate, alive relationship. Why should they? We automatically assume that. But the truth is that when anything challenging for us, we've had role models. If you want to be a great skier, you take ski lessons. If you want to be a great pianist, you take piano lessons. If you want to be to be a doctor, you got to work hard in med school. To be in a long-term relationship, that is challenging. It takes work. And in order to do anything that's helpful, you need to be able to develop your skills, just like in anything else. So this is not your parents' relationship. You're about to embark on an adventure. There's nothing wrong. If you're having problems in your relationship, there's nothing wrong with you or your partner or your relationship. This is about learning something new. This is about learning something new. Okay. So I am going to mute everybody out just to keep it quiet, but then there'll be times when I will, because there are people on the phone, that's great. I love it. So when there's time for questions, I can always ask you. So let me now go to slide number 3. Okay? So what I want you to do, you'll see that there's a lot of exercises I'm going to ask you to do. I want you to think about your parents' relationship. What was good about it and what wasn't so terrific? Notice how you might be recreating what you were familiar with in your family of origin. We all do. What else are we going to do? Now, let me give you a little bit more about me, by the way, just a little tangent here. I'm teaching at the USC School of Social Work. It's my first semester. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm teaching the most advanced theory class to the second-year grad students. Learned a ton, learned a lot. One of the things that I've learned is, excuse me, someone's on the phone there. One of the things I learned is that, that little dialing threw me off a little bit, because I'm at home and someone forgot that I'm doing this, and I'm secluded somewhere. Okay, but anyway, what was I saying? Okay, so what I've learned a lot in this USC School of Social Work is so much about the brain. I've learned a lot about theory. I basically learned the information by Sunday, and I teach it on Tuesday. It's really exciting. But my goodness, the brain is so amazing. The brain is amazing. And what happens is, when we're dealing with anything that's going on in our lives, the brain is affected. So if we've had parents, for example, that weren't very close to each other, our neurons absorb that. And they maybe weren't very close to us, or maybe they were, but what we experience in our brains is, this is what relationships are like. So you get into a new relationship, and you're going to experience your partner the way you would experience your parents' relationship. You don't do it on purpose. It's not conscious. As a matter of fact, there's two kinds of memory. One is called implicit memory. That's in our limbic brain, a part of the brain called the amygdala. And that implicit memory, it's nonverbal, and memory is stored there. And that's where we store memories of how couples interact. We get that from our parents, not just our parents, but probably mainly our parents. We get it from our grandparents and maybe other people that are really close to us. And so, of course, we recreate it because we have these neurons that fire together. Neurons are fired together, wired together, and so they're all wired, and then you get in a relationship, and your partner, just being married possibly, can stir up those same neurons. As a matter of fact, for some people, the relationship seems great until they get married. Why is that? Because when they get married and there's a commitment, something happens in their brain, and they suddenly become their parents. Not really, but neurologically speaking, they do, and of course, psychologically speaking. So we are going to make sure that you know the good news about all this, because what I've also learned as I taught these students is the brain has a lot of plasticity, meaning that more neuronal connections can happen, more neuron integration can happen throughout life. Yes, our early childhood affects our brains and affects our psychological development. However, we have the capacity as we get older, and this is a precursor to what I'm talking about with couples, but we have the capacity to truly change our neuron connections with each other so they're more integrated. The different parts of the brain are more integrated. The left and right hemispheres are more integrated. The higher brain structures are integrated with the lower, which is great news because we are not at the effect of our history. So as you do this exercise, you want to spend some time with your partner creating a relationship vision. And you want to be realistic, but not too realistic, because you don't want to base your vision on the limits you might have learned seeing your parents in action. Maybe there were areas of your parents' relationship that were strong, but maybe there are areas that weren't so strong. You can go beyond your parents. This is not your parents' relationship. Commit to evolve beyond what you have observed before. So what I would suggest is you sit down with your partner and think for yourself, what is important to me? What would make my relationship terrific? And this is not an easy question, because lots of times we don't really think about what we haven't seen yet, right? We think about what we've seen. So think about other couples you might have seen, even in the movies. Think about couples that just seem to have something that maybe your parents didn't have, and decide you could have that and put that as part of your relationship vision. And then your partner could do the same, And then you'll find areas of overlap in the vision, which is great. Definitely add that to your list. You might find things your partner thought of that you could add to your list. Or you might say, no, I don't want that part of my relationship vision yet. So you can have a set of priorities. And get a handful of goals. And that's going to be very important for the work you do. And as we go through the seminar, you'll see that your vision is what's going to pull you, because here's the thing. We all are attached to the status quo. We're all attached to the status quo. And we need to be able to break free of the status quo, as we'll talk about in a few minutes. Okay. Perspective-changing idea number two. You cannot assess who your partner is or judge his behavior. By the way, when I say a gender like his or hers, they both apply, but it's unwieldy to keep saying his or her. So I'm going to just say one. Sometimes I'll have the male, sometimes I'll have the female. But you cannot assess who your partner is or judge his behavior without looking at your influence on him. You cannot not affect him. What I mean by that is you cannot factor yourself out of the equation. How you perceive of your partner affects your partner. How you perceive of your partner affects your partner. So, for example, if my partner is someone who just doesn't listen, maybe I even came from a family where listening wasn't a real good, important value. Maybe achieving was, maybe listening wasn't. And I get married to my partner who doesn't seem to be a good listener either. As time goes on, how am I perceiving my partner? Am I perceiving my partner as a good listener? Or am I perceiving my partner as a bad listener? Probably I'm perceiving my partner as a poor listener. Now, if I perceive my partner as a poor listener, then I'm going to talk to my partner in a way that resembles that belief. So I might talk harsh. I might talk fast. I might talk with the expectation that she or he is not going to listen to me. So that behavior actually encourages the very behavior we don't want. So if I talk harshly and I say, oh, you know, I've got to tell you something. I don't like the way you did that. And I'm talking because, you know, I know this person's not going to listen to me anyway. And I talk in this judgmental tone because you're not going to listen to me anyway. My partner probably won't listen. Now, even if there's no history to back up that I should believe that my partner will listen to me, even then I should practice perceiving my partner as a good listener. That might seem kind of strange to do, but we need to do that. When I go into businesses as a consultant, sometimes the supervisor, employer, owner of the business will be perceiving an employee as a bad worker, as a loser. And if that supervisor continues to perceive that person as a loser, there's no chance that person will improve. No chance at all. So a lot of times I'll go into these businesses and I start working with the owner or the president or whoever's the supervisor, and they go, why are you working on me? He's the one that has the problem. And I'll say, that might be true, but let's experiment with new perceptions that seem absolutely crazy to you. Now, instead of looking at your employee who has been not showing up for work, falling on the job, underachieving, rather than seeing them as a loser, why don't you see that person as a winner who just hasn't hit stride yet? It might seem crazy, but imagine what that would be like. How would you talk to your employee if you perceived your employee as a winner? And likewise, as a couple, how would I treat my partner if I perceive my partner as a good listener? Or if I perceive my partner that she really cares, even though lately she's been really angry at me. The problem is she might have been angry at me because I perceive her like she doesn't care, so I treat her in ways that makes her angry at me, which then confirms that she doesn't care. And you see how this works. So the belief systems and the perceptions become self-fulfilling prophecies. And that's why it's so important to challenge those beliefs, to challenge how you perceive your partner, and to experiment with new perceptions. So the exercise is do an inventory with yourself regarding how you automatically perceive your partner. For example, do I perceive my partner as really sexually conservative? Okay. Well, if you do, you might be treating that partner that way. What if you treated her like she was wild? The wildness hasn't come out yet. It's hidden deep, possibly, but your partner's wild. How would you treat her? How would you talk with her? What would you do? You might start to speak and act in ways that would maybe surprise her at first, maybe even disorient her at first, but that's okay. this is about unbalancing the status quo. It's about becoming all of who you are and more of who your partner is. And so your partner might very well begin to shift in a direction of being a little less conservative, a little more wild. These things happen. I've worked with couples. I've worked in my own relationship, and this really works. See, this is the key here. The key is that you are powerful. This is the when I get interviewed on the radio or TV, people ask, "What, in one sense, what's the most important thing you could tell people, tell your couples?" And I say, each partner is absolutely powerful, and they live as if they are so powerless. We're waiting for the other person to do and feel and say what we want them to say. Instead, we have to say that we have an impact. We play a role in this partnership. Sometimes in seminars, I'll ask a woman, "Can I dance with you?" And I ask the husband, "Is that okay?" And, "Yeah, of course." And I start doing this foxtrot, and I start to complain. "I don't like this dance. This dance is terrible. It sucks. I don't like this dance." I go over and over. After about 30 seconds of them thinking I'm crazy, I step out of that, and I start to do a little rock and roll. And the female never stays in the foxtrot position. She either joins me and starts to rock and roll with me, or she sits down and looks at me like I'm crazy still. But she doesn't stay in the same position. And my metaphor there is, yes, I was complaining while we were doing the foxtrot, but wasn't I doing the same steps as I did right before? So if I'm in a marriage and I'm complaining about my partner, and I ask myself, have I been saying things differently than before? Have I been behaving differently? If the answer is no, then this is something I got to look at, because I'm powerful. I can make a difference. So what we're talking about is here is how to perceive. How would I behave towards this person if I entertained this new perception? That's very important. Okay, from time to time, I'm going to just check for questions. I know that asking questions is a little bit challenging. I've said this in other seminars, both live and over here. But feel free if you can. If not, that's fine, too. I have plenty to talk about. So think about what I'm saying about interpersonal creativity, interpersonal power. Think about it. It does require courage. It does require courage. Let's go to perspective-changing idea number 3. You probably give plenty to your partner. That is not the problem. You are not giving her what she really needs to feel vibrant and alive. You are not giving her what she really needs to feel vibrant and alive. This I see over and over again. I can't tell you how many times. Oftentimes it's the man that says, no matter what I do for this woman, it's not enough. And he experiences that, and I can understand it, because this man probably is giving a lot. He's working hard. She might be too. If not, she's working hard with the kids or whatever she's doing. He contributes in the kitchen, in the house. He mows the lawn, whatever. So why is she upset? Why is she upset? Okay, well, the corollary to idea number 3 is this. In order to give her what she really needs, you have to give from your weakest link. That is the catch, and why most relationships fail. Failing, however, is unnecessary in most cases, and success is usually very, very possible. Very, very possible. I'll give you an example. I had a couple that came see me, and he was a passive man for the most part, and she was very, very aggressive, definitely wore the pants in the family. They had adopted kids. One of the kids really gave them a lot of problems, and she was saying that the husband, the father of the child, was being too nice. He was now like 22, not working, not going to college, nothing. And she insisted that the husband start to lay some firm rules down and follow through and say, if you're not working or going to school by the certain time of the month, that he's kicked out of the house. And, he did that. He started to get firm. It wasn't in his nature. His nature was passive and people-pleasing and conflict-avoiding. But he did that, and he stuck by his word, and he was definitely doing everything we asked. Yet, they came in one session, and he says, "Hey, I'm doing this stuff, and following through. But look at her; she doesn't like me. She's still not into me. She's still frustrated all the time." So I started thinking about her being kind of overly driven and ambitious, and so I like to think of her as someone who's overly using her in her masculine, I would say, and not enough of a feminine. And so I just looked at him and I said, do something to make her feel that you are the man. That's all I said. And he looked at me, what do you mean? Right here? Right now? I said, yes. Right here, right now. Do something to make her feel like a woman. And we looked at each other for about 30 seconds, which truthfully actually felt like a very long time, I think, for both of us. But I stayed with it. And then suddenly he moved towards her. He took his arms around her in front of me and gave her this mad, passionate kiss that lasted about as long as we looked at each other. So after that, she moved her hair, up. She had this fluffy hair. She moved it, and she looked at me and she goes, wow. And he said, was that all right? And she goes, it was just weird, but was it all right? Oh, it was great. And you could see, I could see, how her face changed. It was, even in that moment, she experienced his masculine desire, and she felt attractive. She felt like a woman. That changed the rest of the session. They walked out arm in arm. The following week, the glow was still persisting. We had to keep that going. But it showed how the one thing that he probably never would have done without me insisting is just to initiate, even though there was fear of rejection. So this is what she needed. She needed him to take control, make something happen, make her feel like a woman, as we say. And so that's just an example. That would have been something that would have been very hard for him to do because that wasn't his personality style. We have to give from our weakest link. And when we start to get curious, what is my weakest link? Is it like this man initiating a sexual activity or romance or dating? Is it listening? Is it expressing feelings? You know, a lot. You know, well, we'll get about feelings in a minute. I'll get to that. I'll cover that base. But basically, we need to look at what is it that we're not good at. If we work on that, it has a big effect. The good news is you don't have to become phenomenally wonderful in your weak area. You actually just got to get a little better in your weak area, and there's this amplification effect that happens. I see it over and over again. Why couples fail is they don't change at all. They don't work on their weakest link at all. They keep giving from their strength. The woman appreciates it for 2 seconds maybe or 10, but it doesn't really move her on the Richter scale. You want to move her on the Richter scale. So the exercise is, so what are you not that capable of giving that your partner wants? And what is she saying she really wants? You could ask her, of course. Sometimes she tells you verbally, sometimes non-verbally, and you could always ask. Would you be willing to improve even a little in that weaker area? And like I just said, decide to do it. The benefits are enormous. The catch is it's anxiety-provoking to do things we're not good at. We tend to do things we're good at. We do the same old thing. You could see the theme in all this. One of the secrets to a long, hot marriage is to be courageous, is to bring out a new part of you. And this new part of you, at first, might not even feel like you. That's how it works sometimes. In a way, I call it real pretending. You got to pretend. But as you pretend, you actually might find that there's something inside of you that's been latent that can now come out. So you discover new skills, new traits, new parts of you that lay dormant. If there's something you do, and you do it for a while, and it still doesn't feel good, then drop it. But much of the time, when you do it enough times, it suddenly becomes part of who you are. You have now just added to yourself. You've added to who you are. Okay. So, let's see. So, you could start to see that the way I look at relationships is it's a people-stretching machine. It makes us stretch how we think. But now, as you start to give in from your weakest link, you actually can develop more of who you are. People call us shrinks. I find couples and individuals come in shrunk. My job is to help them expand into more of who they are. And that's my job as a therapist. But relationships also provide an arena in which each partner can become more and more of who they are. They can expand into more of who they are. Okay. Let's see if there are any questions here. Okay, here the question is, is a statement and a question. It's, that sounds really hard to do, to give from an area where you're not very good at. Are there any tricks to help yourself in that regard? Now, that's a very good question. I don't know about tricks, but I'll tell you one thing that is a prerequisite also that I'm glad you asked that question because it makes me think. A prerequisite for being a healthier partner is to develop more and more what I call radical self-acceptance. Accept yourself more than you could have before. So one of the things is, if there's something you're not good at, practice making statements to yourself like, it's okay to do something I'm not good at. It's okay to not be good at something. It's okay to take a chance. It's okay to get rejected. This is when we move to the next area, which is on communication and connection. You'll see how it's also very important to practice radical self-acceptance. So the basic trick is to be willing to jump off the diving board and know that somehow, it's not like you get hit the head on the bottom of the pool here. You know, you might do a belly flop, but so what? Maybe it stings a little bit. You'll be fine. And what might happen is you might have a beautiful dive. You might find that as you do this, that you have moved your partner. You've hit that 8.5 on her Richter scale. And now you're positively reinforced to do the same, like the man that I talked about with his wife who made out with her in front of me. You know, this was now he had something to go on, like, wow, I have to do things like that. And that extrapolated to other things. What was the trick? He jumped off the diving board. You have to jump off the diving board. You have to get better at jumping off the diving board. That was a good question. I hope that answered it. All right. So, next, you need to learn how to play catch with your partner. We're moving into another a section here. That's also, by the way, let me talk a little bit about, because a lot of this is from my book. My book, The Long Hot Marriage, definitely I encourage you, if you don't have it, to buy it. I'm not doing this telesummit to sell, but I am thinking in terms of how best I could help the listeners out there. And so I am going to tell you some things, a few things that you can think about, because sometimes we need help. The teleseminar, webinar here is part of that. Reading my book will, first of all, it gives you a chance to read words that will reinforce what I'm talking about here. The other thing, of course, I can't get to everything that's in my book in a one-hour teleseminar. So it gives you some of what I'm saying and a lot more. It gives you exercises. It gives you a lot more case examples that people find that when they see the case examples, they relate to some of them, maybe not all of them, but some of them, and they see themselves in the case examples, and it really motivates them to move. And anything that we could do or read to motivate us to move is a good thing. So just go to my website, toddkrieger.com, toddkrieger.com, and you can easily purchase my book, The Long Hot Marriage, which has been highly acclaimed by people such as Harville Hendricks, who was Oprah Winfrey's frequent guest, and I think I think the rumor is that he was actually the therapist for a while for her and Stedman, and then John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and those series of books, and a bunch of other experts. But most importantly, everybody that reads it tells me it's a great book, not a lot of fluff, gets right to the point, and is really, very helpful. Okay, so in this book, one of the things I do talk about is how to connect with each other, and the whole metaphor of playing catch with your partner is very important. Think about this. If I throw a ball to you and you catch it, it's a satisfying experience for me, that threw the ball. Now, if I throw the ball towards you and you watch it drop on the floor, that's not very satisfying. Likewise, if I throw the ball and you just hit it with your hand or your foot or your glove back in my direction, that's not very satisfying either. And lastly, if I take the ball and I throw it 100 miles an hour at you, you're not going to catch it. You're going to protect yourself from getting hurt, period. So likewise, we all have feelings and we all have energy. Some people are more in tune with their feelings than others, and there's lots of reasons for that. To a great degree, it does go along gender lines, not totally, but typically men are going to be more in their heads and women more in their feelings. There are many exceptions to that, though. Has to do with family, too. Basically, if our parents encouraged us to tune into what our feelings were, we have easy access to feelings. If our parents didn't encourage us to tune into our feelings and it was all about other things, achievement or survival or whatever, we learn to suppress our feelings, to sometimes not be conscious of them. And I do believe it's important to develop feeling skills. One of the things I do with clients, men and women, is I help them learn how to locate their feelings. The reason I am talking about feelings and why it's so important is we are talking about the secrets to a long, hot marriage. Well, we're talking about passion. Well, passion happens in the body. We need to get in touch with our body. What's going on? Not just how we look on the surface, but how do we feel? What are our sensations? What are our sensations when we do something with our partner that maybe we normally don't do? But what's my sensation when my partner gives me negative feedback? We need to tune in to what is my feeling, what are my sensations, what are my wants? And then we'll be able to express them. So you need to learn how to play catch. Feelings need to be able to be shared back and forth between two people. Just like having a catch with a ball, two people need to be able to share feelings back and forth, which is energy. That is not oftentimes easy for one of the partners, and like I say, it's usually the man. Sometimes it's difficult for both. For most women, the sharing of feelings is a primary need. Without it, they grow numb and angry. What do I mean by sharing feelings as a primary need? It means that they need to be able to experience feelings coming from their partner to them, so they get to know what's going on the inner world of their partner. Likewise, they need to be able to express what they feel and move it to their partner, and the person takes it and catches their feeling. Without it, they grow numb and angry, and they do not want to have sex with their spouse when this happens. And I know there are exceptions to the rule, but over and over, I see couples where the woman doesn't want to have sex with her husband because they're not emotionally connected. Now, men, we're wired differently, right? We've all heard things like men become emotionally connected through sex, women want to have sex through being emotionally connected. That's very true. Men are like microwaves, women are like crock pots. For the most part, that's true. Women are slower. So, of course, we have to meet each other's needs. If the man wants the woman to want to have sex with him, the man needs to meet that need for sharing and connecting feelings. In order to do that, we need to be able to practice. So the exercise here is to sit facing your partner. Decide whose turn it is to start expressing. The goal of the expressor is to throw her feelings so that he can catch it. In other words, communication 101 would be saying I statements. I was really hurt when you forgot my birthday. Now, throwing the ball at 100 miles an hour would be, you're such a jerk. Can't believe I forgot my birthday again. Okay, that kind of tone and that kind of judgment makes it harder for the husband, in this case, to catch it. Instead, he might be defensive and say, I just forgot because whatever. So she needs to be able to, the woman here needs to, in this example, says, I'm feeling really disappointed that you forgot my birthday. The goal of the listener is to be as receptive as possible to the experience of the expressor. This is not the listener's agenda right now. You got to learn to take turns, like playing a catch. You know, you don't want to, you know, it's not like she throws a ball at you and you don't catch it, but in the meantime you're throwing a ball at her and both people are throwing balls at each other. That's the way couples communicate a lot of times when there's an emotional charge. So we need to be able to communicate, take turns. So do relaxation breaths. In other words, breathing into the belly, exhaling. Slow down if things escalate. Things probably will. Don't give up if it escalates. These exercises, by the way, don't expect perfection. This is an adventure. I'm trying to be your tour guide. We're going on an interpersonal safari. You're blazing a new trail that your parents didn't show you how to do. So if things escalate or you get off track, take a breath, slow down, get back on track. And continue listening, practice. The listener needs to practice being receptive. Think of a receptive state would be the state of mind you'd be in when you're just taking in how wonderful this great food tastes, and you're just noticing it. Or you're noticing the smell of a rose. In this case, you're noticing your partner possibly being sad or disappointed or frustrated with you. I'm talking about negative feelings, but of course there's positive feelings too. As a matter of fact, oftentimes sharing positive feelings are met with the same resistance as negative feelings. I really love you. I really think you're beautiful. And the other person says, oh, no, you don't. Again, that's the same thing as watching the ball drop or knocking the ball back. We have to learn to take in compliments and take in positive feelings as well as negative feelings. So the listener is receptive and takes it in. The expressor, like I say, makes I statements. So you want to practice this. This is something I tell couples to do like every day for like 10 minutes. This is not problem solving, deciding who's going to take the kids. That's a separate thing. This is 10 minutes with each other. If you have problems, that's where I come in. That's where I can come in, or someone like me that knows their way around the relationship area and can help you co-navigate your ship in ways that create more fulfillment and creativity in your life. It starts with this communication. Well, it starts with bringing the best out of your partner by perceiving the partner in the best possible light, giving them a chance, recognizing that the reason your partner mistreats you might not be because that partner is a jerk or uncaring. It might be because that partner is protecting himself or herself in some way. I just kind of rewinded to the beginning when I talked about perceive your partner. One way to perceive your partner differently is to see your partner as wounded, not intentionally hurtful. Okay, so anyway, sit, practice playing catch. Very important. Main challenge to this exercise is we go after the truth. We want things to be accurate. Give up going after the truth. It's a useless goal in interpersonal, intimate dialogues. Give it up. Maybe later, if you guys are in a calmer place, you can bring it up. Example. So when the wife says to the husband, I'm just using the listener example, you just never listen to me. Not a good way to start out, by the way. It's a little provocative. Probably shouldn't use never, but let's say she does. Now the husband's got to be on his game. He takes a breath or two. He knows she's trying to communicate, even though she didn't say I statements. She threw the ball a little harder than she should have. I'm giving you this example because this is real life sometimes, right? And he says, after a few breaths, well, you're really obviously upset with me. Okay, now in his mind he's going, don't listen to you. I listened to you 20 minutes ago. I listened to you yesterday. How could you say such a falsehood? How many times have I had somebody say, that's not true? You know what? It doesn't matter if it's not true. Your partner's saying it because she's coming from some emotional distress, some feeling, and she's saying it. And people oftentimes don't use words that accurately. Don't get caught up in going after the truth, because I will tell you something. If you go after the truth then, think about your own past. How many times has your partner said something that you disagreed with, and it was an emotional thing, and you said no, and you tried to correct your partner, and your partner went, oh, you're right. She doesn't do that, or he. When we're emotional, we hold on to our perception. After we've been heard, after we feel like we've been listened to, maybe at that point, the partner is now more open to the possibility of listening. Okay? So just give up going after the truth. It's really futile at that time. Timing is everything. Definitely timing is everything. All right. Let's go to next. I just want to bring up parent-child patterns. Parent-child patterns are what I see in every single relationship I see. And that means that relationships slip into patterns where one person feels like the parent who has another child, and the other feels like the child who needs the other's approval or will rebel against that person's power. So it's where one person is, like let's say you have the husband says to me, yep, I forgot to call before I came home, and boy, I was in trouble. So when I hear I was in trouble, how old do you think he feels? Does he feel his age, let's say 38, or does he feel 3 or 8? He feels like a little boy who's about to get scolded by mommy. And yet, she's just having feelings, period. Her having feelings doesn't make him in trouble. And we have to learn we have to pay attention to how we slip. How old do I feel? So if you are looking at this slide and listening to me, and you go, well, I am someone that definitely starts to feel like I have another child, you have to look at the way you present yourself. Do you present yourself as your one-up? Do you present yourself as you know better? Do you speak as a lecturer as opposed to saying, this is what I need, this is what I feel? If as you're listening to me and you're looking at the slide, you're experiencing yourself as, yeah, I start to feel like a little kid who's being scolded or controlled or restricted by a parent, can you stop and say, well, my partner just has wants and feelings and strong opinions? And what are my opinions? And I could stand up for my opinion, and I could choose to stay firm. It doesn't mean I act like an adolescent rebelling, but if it's important enough to me, I could stay firm. Or if I see her perspective, even though I really want to do it my way, I could choose to yield. That's not giving up. That's not trying to get her approval. That's just making a choice at this time to yield. So what I'm saying is you go from parent-child patterns to adult patterns. This is absolutely crucial, and I'll tell you something. Nobody wants to have sex with their child or their mother. Well, at least most healthy people. Okay, we're not talking about deviants. So we need to have adult to adult patterns of communicating and experiencing each other, and you're going to slip into it. So catch it. Be aware of when you slip into it. You will, and then consciously get out of it. Say, okay, I'm not the little kid here. I'm not in trouble. My partner's angry. It's not the end of the world. I could listen. I could understand. I could take responsibility. I could own my part of it. That's being a grown-up. So I'm throwing a lot at you because I'm giving you an overview. And, of course, if you have any other questions, you can always ask during the session or, of course, after the summit, after you hear it. And I'm always here to help. Okay? So let's go to the next slide. Because now we're going to get some good stuff here. They're all good stuff. I shouldn't make it sound like they're not good stuff. Okay, romance. See, we have to learn to challenge our perceptions and open up our perceptions of our partner so that we're not locked in. We need to learn how to deal with pain and even learn to listen to positive feelings as well as share them in ways so we start to feel emotionally connected. Most couples, the reason they are emotionally disconnected is because they learned how to deal with pain in a fight-or-flight way. That's what they saw their parents do. Parents reacted. They acted in tension-reductive ways, immediate tension reduction, either fight or flight. Either I yell or I flight. I could flight by having an affair. I could flight by doing drugs, taking alcohol, withdrawing into my room, these days getting on the computer, whatever. There's all kinds of ways to flight, and there's definitely lots of ways to fight. What you want to do is stay open, even when your partner's in pain, and stay connected. Stay in your body and pay attention and remember that you're not in trouble and not slip into those parent-child modes. So there's a lot to think about with all this. That's why, again, to repeat myself, getting my book will help because it reinforces it. And always you could call me at 714-848-2288 or go to my website, email, check out what I could do for you. It's ridiculous to cut yourself short. Don't wait to be in a crisis. We all have tremendous relationship potential, and that's the way I see my job. It's not to fix people because they're not broken. It's to help people evolve beyond their parents and to reach their relationship and sexual potential with their long-term partner. So romance mainly involves slowing down. That's the key phrase with romance, slowing down. Paying attention to speed, and I'm explaining this a little more, is very necessary because most couples move too fast to experience each other. So you have to learn to slow down and take each other in. You may be listening to this. Maybe you're married. Maybe you have kids, multiple kids. You're busy. Most people are really busy. The economy's challenging. People are working their rear end off just trying to get through. Some are doing better than that, but some are really struggling. But in any event, we're all just busy. And we live our lives in survival mode and getting the to-do list done mode. And what's the first to go after the honeymoon period's over? Obviously, when we fall in love, we always make time for each other. Things do seem like in slow motion. But when we get into our life and we become, you know, we take on the roles of husband and wife and mother and father and workers and all that, financial partners, we tend to speed up. We're fast in our head, and we're fast with each other. We don't stop to say, what is going on with me? How am I doing? Let alone, what's going on with you, my dear? How are you doing? So romance does involve slowing down. Now, part of romance would be like buying flowers. Right? That's a very popular way of being romantic, and it's a good way. Why? Because we slow down long enough to go to a flower shop or order from proflowers.com or whatever we do to let our partner know that we're thinking of them and we love them and they're worth it. Well, so that's slowing down. What are ways that you could be romantic? I mean, you want to think about that. What are ways that you could be romantic? Okay? Actually, before I get to the next line, let me say, so romanticism could be as simple as slowing down long enough in the middle of your workday, taking a little break for 10 seconds and writing a sexy text or a complimentary text to your partner. I think you're a wonderful mother, and I'm so grateful that you're the mother of my child. That's romance. So is, I was thinking about you, and I have to tell you, I love your legs. You have great legs. That's romantic, too. There's all kinds of ways. It's slowing down and acknowledging the other person, letting that person know that you're thinking about that person. That is free. Most of us have unlimited texting, so that doesn't cost us any more money. And, of course, some romance could be costing money. That's fine. It doesn't matter to me. Of course, if you take your partner on a romantic 10-day Caribbean cruise, I'm sure she'll be happy with that too. That's great. It's romantic because you get to slow down with each other. You get to enjoy each other. That's something, it's a skill that has to be practiced. You could listen to everything I say here and it will do no good if you don't learn to put some time aside to slow down with your partner. So what are ways that you could be romantic? Think about that. A few that I could think of off the top of my head, writing a little love note, putting on the medicine cabinet so that she sees it when she goes to do her makeup. I'm talking more too much from the men. The women, you know, put on something sexy. Let the person know that, and it could be on a Tuesday night, maybe after the kids go to bed. Okay, this is something that moves him on the Richter scale, possibly. This is all about becoming a high-impact partner. This is about giving in ways that your partner is affected by. Okay. So if you're not that good at romance, know that you can be. It's about slowing down. There's many ways to be romantic, but you have to slow down long enough to create some of those moments. And, you know, also, as we get to sex, it's about slowing down. It's about creating some intensity. So speed is very important. Here's an exercise for you that I think is very important and definitely part of the whole developing a more romantic relationship. Decide on a time every day when you could spend 2 to 5 minutes thinking about what you will do or say that day to uplift the energy of your partner. Isn't that what romance really is about, uplifting the energy of your partner? You are powerful. You could do that. Don't go around thinking you're not powerful when you are. You could do that. Now, previous clients have decided to think about it when they're driving to work or at lunch or driving home, but do what works for you. Oftentimes, if you even have a consistent time when you say, this is the time I'm going to think, what can I do? What can I do? What can I say? Very powerful stuff. Very powerful stuff. All right, I'm going to check now to see if there are any questions. And there are not, so I will keep going. And that is just fine. Sometimes that means people like what I'm saying, too. But whatever the case, if you have a question, let me know. And if we don't, we're going to run out of time here. But this thing ends right at 9, so I'll be stopping it like a minute before so it doesn't get cut off and the recording's not going to sound funny. So what we're going to do is make sure that What I mean is if you have any questions afterwards, feel free to shoot me an email, todd@toddkrieger.com. Okay. Part of it is make a commitment. Get an army of babysitters. An army consists of 3 to 5 possible, responsible, and trustworthy people. Not just one. But if you have little kids, of course, it's for people with little, younger children, that if you're going to have romance in your life, you need to spend some time with each other. I would say go out on a date at least once every 2 weeks. At least. Once a week's better. Once every 2 weeks, people seem to do okay even with that. It makes a big difference in their relationship. And it revives their coupleness. I also suggest you plan a weekend away at least once every 6 months. A weekend. You know, and so it is important to deal with the babysitting issue. 3 to 5 possible, responsible, and trustworthy people, make it a priority for you, because it's basically saying to yourself that your relationship is a priority to you. Again, everything we're doing here is great stuff, great ideas, bringing the best, perceiving the best out of your partner, dealing with feelings, but you have to set the time. You have to make it important. And here's the thing I want to say about that, by the way. For most people, in order to do well at their jobs, they need 8 hours at least, 8 to 10 hours these days, which is what people tell me. To have a major 8.5 Richter scale effect on your partner, how about 8 to 10 minutes every day, or even most days? 8 to 10 hours to be effective at work, 8 to 10 minutes to be effective with your partner. Those are minimums, of course. You could spend more time with your partner. I'm not saying you're restricted to 8 to 10 minutes, but my point is, it takes a lot less to get a lot more with the relationship, and yet we'll spend 12 hours at work and spend no time, quality time with our partner, even though so little it takes to make such a big difference. Think about that. All right. Let's talk about sex, risk, and comfort. You want to leave your comfort zone often. You can visit your comfort zone at times, but don't stay there too long. What do I mean by that? I mean, you need to share more of who you are. You know, there's certain parts of us that we keep hidden from ourselves and our partner, and we need to share more of who we are. Maybe you would like to try something new in bed, but it would show a different part of who you are. Maybe there's a certain fantasy that you have that you're afraid you're going to be judged. You have to be willing to take some chances. Try something different with your partner, and be willing to fail or get rejected. That's kind of funny to say, because you're with a partner maybe of 2, 5, 10, 20 years. But I've seen couples that keep doing the same thing sexually. Their patterns, it's not only what they're doing sexually, it's what they're doing for foreplay or lack of foreplay. By the way, foreplay could be texting to your partner and saying, "I think you're really sexy at 3 in the afternoon. Foreplay. And by the way, the word foreplay to me is kind of funny, because it makes it seem like it's just the preliminaries. Foreplay is the real thing. It's great. If you have sexual intercourse, fine. But I wouldn't ever perceive sex as sexual intercourse. Sexual intercourse is one of the things we could do sexually. But foreplay is great. The foreplay of words, the foreplay of touch. Foreplay is getting us ready or getting us aroused. It's experiencing more intimacy, more intensity. So share more of who you are. Try something different with your partner. And, yes, be willing to fail or get rejected. If you initiate some lovemaking when maybe you typically didn't because your partner was the one that always did, okay, that's something different. Maybe your partner's not used to it. Maybe the first time you try it, it's not going to go well because your partner is used to you being the way you've been. Don't give up. As a matter of fact, when you try new behaviors, it's good to try new behaviors 6 times before you give up, because it takes that many times sometimes for the other person to say, okay, all right, I'll go with it, because your partner is going to be resistant to change too. It's very important to remember, I've said this earlier in a teleseminar here, you need to metaphorically and literally hold hands with each other to unite against the real enemy, the common enemy of the status quo. The status quo is the real problem, not each other. So anything you can do to help each other, try new things, experiment, leave your comfort zone, that's what keeps the relationship fresh. return to your comfort zone to kick back and relax, and then get out of it again. Try something new. Okay? Now, the exercise here for this is do something that will make you closer to your partner, that may initially be a stretch for you, possibly may make you feel a little anxious or awkward. For example, hug her a little longer than usual that might be comfortable for you. Gaze at her, you know, in her eyes a little longer than usual. Couples have a hard time, I notice in my office, even looking at each other for any period of time, more than 3 seconds sometimes, because I think on some unconscious level, they're afraid of what the person's going to see. We have our own sense of inferiority, inadequacy, shame that gets played out with our partner. That's why people say, why are you so nice to everybody else and not with me? Well, we're naked emotionally with our partner and physically, and a partner has the power to really love us, but also has the power to really hurt us and reject us. So, of course, there's more intensity. Take the chance. Look at each other in the eyes. Learn to develop the muscle of getting closer to each other. Caress her more slowly than usual. Share a fantasy or ask for something you would like her to do sexually that you may not have asked before. All that is important for you to create a fresh sex life. It's not even so much technique. It's about exploring. It's about creating a safety between the two of you. See, this is the last slide, by the way. The couple adventure. See your relationship both in and out of the bedroom as an adventure. Make the relationship a safe place to explore yourself and your partner. Practice increasing your capacity to give and receive love, pleasure, compliments, and appreciation. In other words, you have to redefine your relationship. It is not a safe haven where you just get to do anything you feel that you want to do, put on TV with the remote control or whatever. Every success you've had in your life, at work, in health, whatever, took some effort, took getting out there, getting out of your comfort zone. You know, if you exercise and stay in your comfort zone, it's not doing you any good. If you stay in your company, you don't get out of your comfort zone, you're not getting that promotion. You're not going to get that raise. You're not going to open that business which will give you profit. Well, relationships, too, is an adventure. It's an adventure. And use your partner make a path this has become a safe place to explore yourself and your partner, to not always get it right. You know, sexually, if you try something and it doesn't work out great or your partner didn't like it, so don't do it next time. Try something new. Give yourselves a chance to experiment and explore. This is the secret to a long, hot marriage. Keep it fresh. Be willing to explore. Connect on deeper levels. Be willing to tolerate intensity. And see the best in each other. And you will go far. You really will. You have no idea your own limits because you're only seeing yourself now from what you've been practicing. Practice something new. Do some different dance steps. That's the key here. That is the key. And when you do that, sky's the limit. If you need help, you know where to find me. My book's The Long Hot Marriage, which you get on my website, or you go to thelonghotmarriage.com. And I wish you the best in your current relationship, or if you're not in a relationship, you have to listen to this. Hopefully you'll be more prepared to enjoy your next relationship. Thank you very much, and I enjoy talking to you. Bye-bye.